Awesome Man Show here with Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports, Real GM, Front Office Show, Celtics Blog. He's all over the place. Keith, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yes, indeed. Now, Keith, I want to talk to you about our Atlanta Hawks here, man. We had a big offseason, free agency, bolstering our bench, getting some veterans around. What are your thoughts, first and foremost, on what Travis Schlenk and the Hawks did this offseason here, and our shortened, condensed offseason we had so far here?
Yeah, short and condensed is the exact way to put it, man. It was started and was done in what felt like 5 minutes.
Yes.
It was wild. But yeah, the Hawks cut is better than, you know, just about anybody in the league, I think. There was this perception out there that maybe last season they were going to make that push and be in the playoff mix, and things just didn't really kind of go their way. And I think a big part of that was they didn't have any bench depth. They didn't have much coming off the bench. And anytime a guy was out with an injury, or like when John Collins was suspended, they really struggled. And then clearly anytime Trae Young came off the floor, they really struggled to get the offense going. And I think the challenge there was, you know, they added Jeff Teague midseason, and he helped out quite a bit, I think, on that second unit, just stabilizing things some. But that wasn't enough. So now they hit the offseason with more cap space than anybody, and they put it to work. They, you know, had Bogdan Bogdanovic, Danilo Gallinari, Chris Dunn, Rajon Rondo, Onyeka Okongwu at the draft. Now this is a team that goes 10, 11 guys deep. It's funny, the question for me has almost turned to, do they maybe have one guy too many? You know, yes. Is somebody going to kind of be out of the rotation? And, you know, that's, you know, it's not necessarily the worst problem to have, but Lloyd Pierce is going to have some difficult conversations just about every night with someone, you know, as long as the whole roster is healthy and available. But, you know, that's not the end of the world. I'd rather have that than last year where, you know, you were turning to guys who probably were better off in the G League or, you know, being your third string guys versus your backups. So, yeah, absolutely. I added a lot. You know, they sacrificed their future flexibility roster-wise and cap space-wise, but I think it was the right move. It was time to push in around the kids and add the right veterans and really try to make this a playoff team.
Now, Keith, my question is, how does that mean for Herter, Reddish, and those young guys in Hunter? Because, you know, you add in a Gallinari, a Bogdanovic, a Rondo, those minutes that were there last year are now dried up some. So, like you said, who, knowing where our young team is rebuilding and retooling, how do you make that work? Trying to win now and get those guys experience at the same time.
Yeah, that's the difficult thing, right? For Lloyd Pierce now is Travis Schlenk did his job. Now it's up to Pierce to kind of let it all shake out. And I think you're okay for the most part, because what you're going to do is, I'm assuming Bogdanovic is going to start, which is going to push either Herter or Hunter to the bench. I think it should be Herter, because I think Hunter, it gives them a defensive presence on the wing that they wouldn't have otherwise in the starting group. And it gives them some switchability with him and Collins, and Bogdanovic can, you know, do some things and switch around and help Trae Young some. And now they've got Clint Capella, who's almost kind of like a new addition because they never played a game for them after being acquired. So you've got this grouping now where what you're going to see is, you know, who goes to the bench. So like I said, I think it'll probably be Herter. We know Gallinari's going to come off the bench, so that's okay there. And then does that push Reddish to out of the rotation? Is he going to be the backup small forward? What happens with Dunn? What happens with Rondo? I know Chris Dunn's maybe not going to be available right away to start the season, so that'll clear that up just a little bit. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, again, they went from having, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 NBA players to now they've got, you know, 11 quality guys. And to your point, some of those are young guys who need the minutes. So that's going to be tough to work out. That's a tricky, you know, balancing act. That's going to be a difficult thing for Lloyd Pierce to figure out. But, you know, it's one of those things where you hope in this year where, you know, let's knock on wood and hope nobody's knocked out by, you know, COVID or anything like that. But every team's, you know, pretty well prepared that's going to be the case. And the Hawks are in a position where if that does happen, at least now they know they're turning to another guy who's probably pretty good in their place.
And I'm thinking about John Collins, Keith. I know he wants a max contract. I know that. Yeah. I've been told that by multiple people told me that, and I know it to be true. So I know you got to max out Trey Young next year, max out John Collins. So you have two young guys maxed out if you do that, and your cap is tied up for years now with pieces who you believe are key to the future, right? Which gives all flexibility going forward. Would you max out John Collins, and what do you see his value to be? I know he wants to max. What would be your thing for him? Would it be 5 years, $100 million, or 5 years, $90 million, or does you give him what he really wants? Is that max deal?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My my dad had a saying when I was a kid growing up that went, wish in one hand and something in the other and see which one fills up faster. You know, I think that's kind of where we're at with John Collins. You know, he can want the max extension all he wants, but he's not going to get it. I don't think he, you know, in order to get that, you have to be a guy who's either been an all-star in your first few years. You need to be right on the borderline of being an all-star. And I say this as someone who absolutely loves John Collins and loves his game. I think, you know, this is a guy, when you can score 20 points per game, get 10 rebounds per game, and you can do it with the efficiency and shooting percentages he has, and he's continuing to add the three-pointer to his game, that's, you know, somebody I would pay, you know, considerable money for. But I don't think the Hawks are going to do it, because I think what they have to be wary of is what you said is, you know, Trae Young's getting a max deal next year. You know that's coming. But now that you've committed so much money to Danilo Gallinari, you've got a Kongwu who kind of plays the same position as Collins in a lot of ways. I think what they're going to do is, they're, unless they can get Collins on something that seems pretty team friendly, I think what's going to ultimately happen here is he is going to go into free agency next year, restricted free agency next year, and they'll kind of let it play out at that point. Because giving him, if he won't come down off a max deal into something that's in maybe, let's call it, the 16, 17 million a year range to start out with, then I think the Hawks are going to say, yeah, let's just let this thing play out. We'll see where we're at. If a trade develops in season, or if something opens up next off season, we'll figure it out then. But it does become difficult to commit that much money to those few guys on the roster, especially when you got to build out the rest of the team around them.
And my other thought was this, Keith, that you maybe get rid of John Collins to pay maybe a Reddish or a Hunter down the road, looking at that down the road too, because you get to look at those books all the way down the road. So he might want that, like you said, but in reality, his contract is going to determine how flexible the Hawks can be going forward, knowing you got those young guys in the pipeline right behind him and Trae Young.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the tough part too. And there's a question of, how well does he fit alongside Trae Young? Because offensively, it's a fantastic fit, but neither one of them is great defenders. I think Collins can be passable if he has other good defenders around him. I think he's got some of the skill sets and tools there. But if Young and Collins are your backbone, those are guys that are very much considered to be one-way players. Excuse me. They play, you know, offense, so they don't play a whole lot of defense.
Yes.
Collins probably also should play some small ball five, you know, on occasion too. And I think you've got that thing you got to figure out as well is, you know, if you've got Capella and Okongwu, what are you going to do? Can you play Collins and Gallinari together? Yeah, offensively you can. Sure, that'd be fine. But defensively, that's going to be kind of a mess. So, you know, that means you're probably having to play Capella and Dunn out there with those guys, and that becomes what they add, you know, for floor spacing, takes away a little bit of what Dunn and Capella add defensively. So that starts to become, you know, a little bit of an offset there. So I think those are the questions you're asking with John Collins is, you know, what is his fit going forward? I think if you could, you know, swing a deal for a more defensive-minded player who fits in better around some of these offensive-minded pieces that they've added this offseason, that might be the move versus giving him that new big contract.
And I read on your Twitter feed that you Dillo has a partial guarantee in that third year, so it's pretty much not really guaranteed, but you pay him $5 million or pay him the whole 20 there. So that's kind of a little cute move by Travis Link there to make sure, you know, protect the Hawks against him aging out bad at 34 years old there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what you do with that. That is, you know, even if it's a, you know, slight overpay on the first couple years, that's fine. That's not the end of the world, because you can get out of it pretty easy on that third year. And I think they'll be okay though. I think Gallinari, you know, what he'll become, I think, by the time this contract ends, he'll be more of your standstill spot up shooter, that then he will be the guy who can, you know, create a little bit of offense off the dribble and do some things, you know, as a pick and pop guy. I think he'll be more just your kind of straight floor spacer than he will be anything else. And that's not the end of the world. We just saw Davis Bertans for that role, you know, get paid $80 million over the next 5 years. So I think, you know, Gallinari is a guy who that's what he eventually will progress into. It's just going to take him a little bit to get there.
Now, Keith, in Eastern Conference, I was telling people here, I said, I feel like the Hawks are at best in that play-in game. That's 7, 8, 9, 10. They're out in the belt in the top 16 of the Eastern Conference. So, and I just feel like, you know, we paid a lot of money to get better, yes, most only, but we're still kind of in that 7 to 10 range. So, we're building still. We're not quite there yet. So, what are your thoughts on that mindset that, hey, we're going to pay to get in the playoffs but not really be to contend against the top 16 in the Eastern Conference we have right now already?
Yeah, I think things in the NBA take steps, right? You don't go from way down here to way up here in a year. That's not something, you know, that happens all that often, unless, you know, a team really had injuries or something, you know, odd went on. So I think what you're going to see happen with the Hawks is you will see them take that step into being right in that playoff mix. And I'm with you because I think you know, Boston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Indiana, Miami, those teams are all clearly better. Philadelphia is another team there. So that's probably your top seven in the East. And then you're going to get into, you know, all right, well, who's next behind those guys? And Toronto as well. I left them out of that seven. You know, then it becomes now what the Hawks have done is one of those teams will fall out of that seven. We know that. That happens every year. Somebody will have injuries or something, and their season will go, you know, the wheels will come off and they'll fall down. But Atlanta has put themselves in the mix with whoever that team is. Then the Orlando Magic, I think the Hornets will probably be in that mix this year. I think the Wizards will be in there this year as long as they have better health. So those are the teams that they're kind of competing with now. Maybe the Chicago Bulls, if they can get healthy and their young guys take a step forward. That's the group Atlanta's, you know, competing with now to try to get into the playoffs. And I think they have a good chance. I think what's different this year is, right, you don't have to be 8 anymore. You can be 9 or 10. And still get there because of that play-in tournament. So yeah, I think you're right. I think you got them in the right place. But I don't think spending the money to get there is the worst thing, because I think, you know, you got to spend money eventually, right? They were, you know, you can't sit on, you know, $40, $50, $60 million in cap space every year and just, you know, hope for the best. You had to do something to make sure Trae Young was convinced you were trying to win. And, you know, that you want to be one of those best teams in the league. So I think they spent it wisely. I think they added, you know, good players who fit around what they're doing. And then I think, well, what you'll see, you know, ultimately with them is this year is the building year. Get into the mix. Then Young, Collins, Okongwu, Hunter, Herter, Reddish, you know, all the young guys take a step forward. And then next season is about, you know, trying to get into that, you know, mix for home court advantage. You know, that'll be the next step. And then, you know, from there, it depends, right? Because then a lot of things have to go right. You have to probably make a couple other moves to really get into title contender status. But it's all steps. You're going from 14th in the East to into the playoff mix. That's pretty good. You know, be happy with that this season. As long as you're playing meaningful games, and I almost said April because that's what it usually is. But you know, late in the year, you know, May, June, yes. you're happy, right? As long as you're playing meaningful games then, all the way, you know, getting into the playoffs, you're feeling pretty good.
And personally, I want Lloyd Pierce to do well because I like him personally. Excuse me. I can personally, you know, and I know when Greg Foster left, they hired Nate McMillan, and I know that's not good because if he doesn't go very well, last guaranteed of his deal, you know he's going to be the interim head coach, and then Lloyd's gone. So personally, I want Lloyd to do well because I like him a lot. I just don't want that to happen to him like that because I saw what happened, and he hired the next pretty much one, McMillan. So you know what time of day it is. So I'm worried about that for Lloyd because he's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you know, ownership without openly come out and saying, you know, we need to be in the playoff mix this year and be a playoff team. They basically said that. And I think that put Travis Schlenk and Lloyd Pierce, you know, kind of in a tough spot. Schlenk had to go, you know, he had to go spend that cap space, add guys, and now Pierce has to figure it out on court. Otherwise, yeah, the reality is if this team is, you know, if we're 40 games into the season and they're like 15 and 25, they're going to make a change. You know, that's, you know, unfortunate, but we just, you know, we've both done this long enough to know, you know, that's going to be how it goes, right? They're going to make that change. Nate McMillan, who is a, you know, quality, you know, NBA head coach. He's been around a long time with a couple different franchises. He's kind of there now as the guy in waiting to take over that spot if that happens. You know, so hopefully, you know, that won't be. Hopefully they'll be, you know, 20 and 20 or 25 and 15 or, you know, something in that range. And they're feeling pretty good, you know, as we hit that kind of midpoint of this season marker. And they're feeling like, all right, well, we're going to get into this playoff run. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, especially this year where the season's kind of really split in halves, though the way they're doing it because of the coronavirus concerns. I think you're going to see a lot of teams use that halfway marker as a chance to really make some assessments about their future and what do they want to do, because the trade deadline is going to come about a week or two after that break happens. And then what you'll see is, I think his teams will really look at it and say, all right, you know, is it change, you know, with the roster? Is it a change with the coaching staff? You know, or in Atlanta's case, is the change, does it need to be in the front office?
Yeah, they're right. And I know you cover the Celtics as well. Excuse me. And my guy, Al Horford, did last year. He got that. After that, I got a big deal from Philadelphia. Gordon Hayward did it and got a big deal from Charlotte. Did you imagine ever seeing Al Horford get what he got from Philadelphia last offseason and Gordon Hayward getting what he got from Charlotte this offseason? I mean, those both shocked me, Keith. I was shocked, brother. I'm like, really? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I thought both of those guys in their respective years were going to settle right around 4 years, $100 million. Well, when it pushed up over that, I was stunned. You know, I think Horford's deal, the benefit there is it does decline year to year, and his last year is only partially guaranteed. It's about half guaranteed. You know, Hayward's is, you know, that's $120 million, and he's going to get every dime of that $120 million. Now, I think the difference is Philadelphia was really shocking because it wasn't a real good roster fit for Horford. Yes. And we saw that right now. Daryl Morey comes in, and one of his first things he does, he moves him and trades him away and gives away a first round pick to do so and gets, you know, a couple other guys back in his place that I think fit better in Danny Green, you know, and some of the other guys they added this offseason. So that's, you know, deal one there. And now with Hayward, it's the number. It's, you know, 4 full years at, you know, $120 million is shocking for a guy with his injury history. He hasn't been healthy over the last 3 years in Boston. He's missed considerable time, you know, clearly with the broken leg. He told us right before the start of the bubble that he has constant pain in that leg. And it's just, you know, sometimes it gets so bad he can't play. So that's something, you know, I think you have to kind of, you know, really raise an eyebrow at. But I get it a little bit from the Hornets standpoint. They are in a position where they have to overpay to get free agents. You know, no one's just going to, you know, go there for the same kind of deal that they can get, you know, 4 or 5 other places. So I think that becomes a little bit of the challenge for the Hornets is, all right, well, you know, we got to overpay. So it is what it is there. You know, we'll figure that out, you know, as we go in this. But boy, that's a big number. I'm worried what happens in year 3 and 4 of that contract. If he can't get healthy, that's going to be pretty ugly on their books.
I thought the Knicks would be the one to do something that stupid, not the Hornets.
You know, what's funny, though, right, that the Knicks have been super patient this year.
They kept
the powder dry. Yeah, it's a new front office there. They think doing things a little bit different. I just did a podcast yesterday where it was all about the Knicks, and I said, you know, I really like what they did. I think they added veterans. That makes sense. They're guys who can push the young players, but they're also not guys you feel like you have to play over any of the young guys, you know, and they still have $18 million in cap space. So they're just kind of, you know, hanging out there with, you know, all right, well, you know, if they're going to be the team, every trade rumor that comes up that involves big money, they're going to be involved as the third team in. you know, this year where it's going to be, you know, oh, we could send them to the Knicks, you know, for, you know, this player and, you know, the rest of their cap space and those kind of things. So I like what they did this year compared to, you know, the last few years where it feels like everything they do is shortcutting the rebuilding process every way possible.
But the Knicks also would be very handy for those who want to get on the tax line, those few teams who can get under the tax line, the trade deadline, because I'm like, okay, I'll give you a top 55 protected second round pick to dump the salary off because I get on this tax line, because I just see that. Who would have thought the Knicks actually be somebody that can take money in and get draft picks for it? Whoever thought they would be. But 2020 is really rearing its ugly head again, man. The Knicks are
better. That's it, yeah. You know, but better than, you know, five overpaid power forwards. Just to spend the money just because you got it to spend, you know. Yeah, absolutely. They're in a really good position compared to where they've been previous years.
Okay, see, Keith, I tried to explain to my listeners last week that the Al Horford trade is about them acting as an over-the-cap team. That they're actually under the cap, but the exceptions push them over the cap so they can have the biannual, the non-taxpaying mid-level. It's all about – being over, get the benefits of being over the cap, because sometimes actually you better be over the cap because you can do more things with less and still get stuff done that way. So explain it to my listeners, Keith, because you're the expert, not me, but explain it to them about that right there, man.
Yeah, well, what they did when they traded Steven Adams, they created what at the time was the biggest trade exception in the league of $27 million. You know, and then when they moved off of Kelly Oubre, they created another big trade exception. After, you know, they got him in the Chris Paul trade and then traded him by himself into the Warriors trade exception. And then when they did the sign and trade with the Hawks for Danilo Gallinari, that created a $19 million trade exception. So they have three of the biggest trade exceptions in the NBA. They think they're actually two, three, and four behind the giant one the Celtics got for Gordon Hayward. As they structure that as a sign of trade. So what those do is now Sam Presti has the ability to, very similar to what we were just talking about with the Knicks, team wants to get rid of, you know, let's say $20 million off their cap, you know, just to, you know, lower their tax bill, create flexibility, whatever it is. Sam Presti's going to be the first guy to, you know, be like, hey, I'm here. You know, what do you want to do? You know, send them to me and give me a first round pick. You know, for it, and I'll eat that contract for you. And that's going to be what you're going to see happen. And they acquired Al Horford. Not, unfortunately, you know, and I'm a huge Al Horford guy. I loved him with the Celtics. But when they acquired Al Horford, they acquired him as less a basketball player, more for the first-round pick. They came along with eating his contract. But with the hopes of, let's get this guy to play pretty good ball this year, maybe into next season. And then they can flip him for, you know, future, you know, pick or young player or something in a trade down the line. And that could be certainly something we could see happen. Because I think Al Horford, when he's in a better situation, still has plenty left to give a team. I think he can still really play. You know, I just think that situation in Philadelphia was such a mess, but that's what Oklahoma City is doing. It's, you know, as a cap guy, you know, my favorite thing going on in the league right now is they're over the salary cap, but they're under the salary floor because they don't have enough guys to make big money other than really Horford to meet the salary floor. But they've got those giant trade exceptions, which count against the tax, but they're not real salary. So they're over the cap, but under the floor, which is just, you know, a quirk we've never seen before.
Most definitely. And also like what Memphis did, Keith, they're getting better from within, keeping those young guys on the team control. They can grow and make better all these years. Memphis is going to be a team to contend within a year or two because of John Morant's just going to get better and better and better.
Yeah, John Morant is fantastic. You know, I think we had high hopes for him coming in, and then he was better than what I think any of us thought he would be. Usually rookie point guards take, you know, a year or two to really kind of figure it out, and he, you know, was, you know, just something else right out of the gate. And Jaren Jackson Jr., Brandon Clark, Dylan Brooks, you know, there's a bunch of guys. And then they hit in their trades, they hit on guys who make sense. You know, De'Anthony Melton blossomed there and really became a, you know, key player. I think he might start early this season, as it looks like they're going to be without Jackson and Justice Winslow to at least start out the year. It sounds like they may either miss or be limited to start the season. But yeah, they ton of, you know, talent there. I think, you know, similar-ish to the Hawks, they're eventually going to have to make some moves to bring in some veterans around those guys, and they may do that via cap space, but they could, as you know, as well do that, you know, through trades by moving some guys. But yeah, it's a really fun young core in Memphis.
same key for people out looking at them, for me versus Portland, because they made us a lot of moves. Derrick Jones Jr., Rodney Hood's back. My buddy Robert Covington, TSU, where I went to school at, is back out there where I'm got Melo. And, you know, Collins is out for a while, but hey, Terry Stotts has a lot of options. They can play different ways and gets things done in that Western Conference there.
Yeah, absolutely. Portland was one of those teams, when you looked at it last year in the bubble, by the time they got through the seeding games, it was a mess of a roster. They were down, you know, Damian Lillard got hurt in the playoffs, and Yusuf Nurkic was better than I think anybody expected him to be. But when Trevor Ariza opted out, they just didn't have what they needed. They didn't have, you know, they were down to about four or five NBA level players by the time you know, the playoffs were going on. So I think what their focus was, we need to add depth, and boy did they. You know, you mentioned, you know, Derek Jones Jr., Robert Covington. It already sounds like those two are going to start at the forward spots for the Blazers, which I really like. You know, Covington's floor spacing ability and defense around Lillard and McCollum is huge, and then Jones gives them that kind of athletic component that they don't really have out of that starting group there, and I think that. It'll be, you know, really fun. I think he's someone, you know, as you're focused on Lillard, McCollum, and Nurkic and keeping an eye on Covington as a shooter, Jones is going to be that guy who's sneaking in along the baseline for dunks and things like that. And he's, you know, very good at playing without the ball in his hands. And then off their bench now, you know, you got Melo, you got Rodney Hood, who sounds like he's back and looks pretty good after surgery. They brought back Enes Kanter, who played the best basketball of his career while with the Trailblazers a couple seasons ago. So, you know, that's depth. When Zach Collins is fully ready to go, you know, he's a young player that they still like. They added, gosh, I'm forgetting somebody. You know, I'm gonna have to take a peek here at my sheets.
Trent, you know, too. But, you got Gary Trent as well.
Yeah, Gary Trent. Yeah, that's who I was forgetting. You know, he really blossomed in the bubble, and then Harry Giles, who's a player that, you know, a lot of people really like as well. So yeah, that team went from having, you know, four or five NBA level guys down to now they've got, you know, kind of similar to what we're talking about to start the show. Now they've got 10 or 11 guys. The difference is a couple of their guys are veteran guys who know, you know, hey, if I don't play for a couple of weeks, it's fine. My turn will come. You know, I'm not too worried about it.
And Houston is just a mess, man. I just don't know what to say about the Rockets, man. Yeah. And, you know, they're trying to, you know, make it work. And they did. Hey, they traded two advertising contracts with Wall for Westbrook with the pick going there to take on that deal. But, man, I just don't know about Houston anymore, because I know from talking to people who down there who told me it was a mess, and I know it's a mess. You can tell it's a mess. But what do you think about that whole situation with James Harden, those guys, man, going forward? And I feel bad for Coach Silas as well, getting his first job and have him deal with this right off the bat.
Yeah, I think that's the part I feel worst about. You know, Steven Silas, first job, you know, so it's just, you know, first training camp ever, and he has to spend every minute of it answering questions about a guy who's not even there. I know he just reported yesterday, but, you know, we'll see. So I think, you know, I think Harden is now at the point where now he's there. I don't think James Harden's the kind of guy who's going to be, you know, a problem while he's there. I think he's going to continue to make it known he doesn't want to be there and he would rather be traded. But I don't think he's the kind of guy who's not going to play hard or, you know, starts, you know, say, you know, my back's bugging me, I want to sit out. He's not a guy who's missed games in his career. So I think they'll be okay. But clearly that's kind of the we're all waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know, with that team. And they made moves that made sense if they keep Harden. I think Christian Wood is really going to break out and be a, you know, big time player that, you know, everybody will know his name. You know, basketball nerds saw how good he was last year for the Pistons when, you know, everybody else, unless Pistons fans, stopped watching. You know, it's, you know, he's going to be really good for them. They added, you know, a couple other nice role players around there. You know, maybe DeMarcus Cousins can get back. You know, we'll see. I think John Wall is a better fit next to Harden if they keep Harden, because I think Wall can actually shoot a little bit as a spot up guy, where that's not Westbrook's game at all. So I think that, you know, works out a little bit better there. So, you know, they're an interesting mix if they have Harden. If, you know, not, then it becomes, what do you get for him? You know, well, what do you need to do there if you, make a move. If you can get, a nice package that includes, some younger guys, but guys who are already ready to play and ready to go, that's a team that can still be in the mix for the playoffs, because if Wall is healthy and can be kind of what he once was, he's pretty good. Like I said, Wood's good. PJ Tucker's still there. Still got Eric Gordon, who's still, one of the better scorers off the bench, when he's healthy. So that's a team that can still be pretty good, but it's all going to just kind of depend on, what happens with James Harden and how long does he stay a member of the Rockets.
Got two more for you, Keith. New Orleans. My man Stan Van Gundy's down there. I love that dude. He's fun to talk to on the show, man. He was all great to me. He's down. Redick is there from the Magic there. You got Lonzo Ball, Ingram on a max contract now. A lot of young guys with Zion Williamson as well. So what are your thoughts on the Pelicans and playing for Stan Van Gundy, where he's going to make them defend first and foremost? Then he goes with his maybe one out, four in, four out offense, or however he wants to do it with those guys he has down there in New Orleans now.
Yeah, I don't know that the pieces are quite there to do that, four out offense like we've seen him have success with before, because that's not really Zion's game. So unless you're going to play Zion extensive minutes at the five, which I don't think they're going to do because they went and traded for Steven Adams. So I think what you're going to see is Van Gundy do, a little bit of a different tweak on things, to play a little bit bigger. But I think Steven Adams is really going to help that team, learn how to defend. I think clearly as a screener, he's going to help open things up for, Brandon Ingram in the pick and roll game. Ingram's a better passer than I think a lot of people give him credit for. So I think, you're going to see him do a lot of the ball handling there. Eric Bledsoe, Lonzo Ball, they're, two guys who can do, different things in the backcourt. So that'll be interesting. Ball has, enough size that he can defend on the wing, really let Bledsoe to kind of take the smaller guards. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting group. But really, as much as they made all these kind of tweaks around, Ingram and Zion, it's all about those two. It's about what those two do. It's about Zion staying healthy and Ingram staying healthy and continuing to blossom. And if they do, everything's going to be fine. If, only one of them hits or neither one of them gets to the levels, that we all think they might, then, the Pelicans are, they're probably kind of stuck in this, bar. Well, we can be kind of in the playoff mix, but we're really not quite there. It all really depends on what's with those two guys. The good news is I think they're both going to get there. So I think it'll all be fine in New Orleans in the end.
Guys with the Clippers, man. I thought they were bringing a point guard because they needed one very, very badly. It's not Pat Bev or Lou Williams. And they brought in Ibaka, Batum, and a lot of little small pieces, bringing Brad Jackson as well off the bench. So what are your thoughts on the Clippers? Are teams going to make a move, say, on these hard cap as well, knowing they need to bring in a point guard to help their roster out? And also brought back Morris on the Bird Rights deal, the 4 years there.
Yeah, and they had to bring back Morris, right, because they didn't have anybody else at that position. They gave up a first-round pick to get him, so you had to bring him back. I think Ibaka is actually an upgrade for them over Montrezl Harrell. It's not that he's a better player than Montrezl Harrell, but I think the fit is much better because I think he brings a stretch element to that big man position that they haven't had. So I think that's going to be really important for them. And then I think as you look at it, it's kind of, if Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are a little bit happier with the guys they have now, then that's going to make a huge difference. And, Ty Lue kind of came in there and basically said, yeah, I was here last year, but now I'm running things and we're going to do it a little bit different. And, some of that, noise about guys being mad about preferential treatment and all that stuff, that's, first order of business is shut all that down. Get that all that out of there. Because is it preferential treatment to keep Kawhi Leonard healthy? Because we saw what happens when you do that. You're a title contender, right? So, yeah, I don't really care if he plays on a Tuesday in Charlotte, right, or some Thursday in, February in Orlando. Who cares? That doesn't matter. You need him to play against the Lakers in the conference finals. Yes. That's when you need him on the court. So I think that's what they're going to do. They're going to get things set up so that those guys are, doing the right thing. They've still got all sorts of depth that they can go to. Point guard, yeah, it might be a problem, but I think what you're focused on there is Patrick Beverley. If you can keep him healthy, he's a good fit because he doesn't need the ball. He'll, hit the occasional jump shot and he'll defend and, do all the Patrick Beverley things you love when he's on your team and hate when he's not. And then Lou Williams can still be that second unit anchor, and really say, go out there, get us buckets, do your thing there. And I think you'll see him and Serge Ibaka work well in the pick and pop game. Is that that'll become, I think, the staple of that backup unit. And then Ibaka, I think, is a better closing option in games for them at the five than Montrezl Harrell was, because he has the ability to block some shots and step out and hit jump shots. And he can still do some of the rebounding. He's not the energy guy Harrell is. So, you know, you may, you know, again, that random Tuesday in Charlotte when, you know, nobody kind of has it, you could throw Harrell in there and, you know, his energy gives everybody a lift. But, you know, in the playoffs, you saw he kind of wasn't playable down the stretch in games.
Yes.
Because that's not who he is. So I think Ibaka, you know, really fits there well. So I think in the end, you know, the Clippers are, you know, as long as they can get back get back and get away from some of that nonsense that was going on in the locker room, they're a team that I think is right back in the title mix.
You tell us where they can follow you on Patreon and also your Real GM Yahoo. Tell them all about your stuff, man, so they can make sure they follow you and get all this great knowledge you give them today here all year long.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA. There's a tweet pinned to the top of my timeline, which will take you to my Patreon, which has all my salary sheets there now. You can find all that information there. You can, you know, pick that up. Times are tough, so don't feel like you got to give a big donation, but, you know, you can do even $1 a month. You know, that's helpful, and that helps me, and you know, all that. You know, we're talking about how cold it is. That'll help keep the heat on here in Orlando, because I had to turn it on today. And then you can find my written work at Yahoo Sports, Real GM, and if you're looking for Celtics specific coverage, you can find that as part of a Celtics blog, as part of SB Nation.
Yes, indeed. But Keith, I tell you what, man, thank you for your time as always. Good to talk to you again, my brother. I love your work, man. You do great stuff. Thank you for helping people understand the salary cap. You definitely help me all the time, brother. You just don't know.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. You all stay safe, you and yours.
You think happy holidays to you, brother. Be good in Orlando, man. Hope to come down there once everything clears up, man. I missed the 407 and 321
we'll
down there.
We'll see
you. Indeed, brother. Hey, be good, brother.
You too.
All right.